Go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 30 of The Police and the People. On today's show, we are going to talk about, there's a new, at least a new bill that's been introduced in California. I don't think it's gone through the legislation process yet, but it's going to be requiring that new police officers either have a bachelor's degree or are at least 25 years old. So to discuss this, I brought in my good friend, Phil here, Phil White from San Jose, California, and to talk about this. And we're going to talk about the merits of it. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that's going to hurt police in the long run? Or is it something that's just kind of a window dressing on California's part to try to address some sort of issue that they think is happening? So, but before we go into that, please, if you can, we got to pay the bills here. We have to be able to pay for our platform, the equipment. I have to pay Phil just to show up, you know.
Yeah, you do.
So we need your money. We need your help. So if you could go to our Patreon account, it's patreon.com/thepoliceandthepeople. Just donate what you can, $5 a month, $3 a month, whatever you can. We would truly appreciate it. It helps us to offset some of the costs of making this podcast and getting it out to you so you can understand the police perspective and also how that is woven into the public's perspective in their partnership with the police. So I really appreciate if you can do that. All right, here we go, diving in. Well, first, Phil and I have decided that we're going to be kind of organic with this one. As you notice, I'm wearing my Marvel shirt. I appreciate you representing the company there with your shirt. But we're both having some whiskey. I'm having Maker's Cheers. Mark. Cheers. Phil, what are you having?
I'm drinking Blanton's tonight.
Blanton's. Very nice. Very nice. That sounds expensive.
It is.
It is?
It is.
Gotcha.
It is.
Oh.
It's all relative, right? I mean, maybe it's New Hampshire expensive.
True. Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably more than Maker's Mark, though, right?
A little bit. Yeah, I think so.
Gotcha. All right. So this new bill in California, man, I saw this on Instagram. It was just something that popped up in my feed, and it got my attention because I have actually, I've never voiced it, but I've always thought that police or people who would go into policing should be at least like 23 or 24 years old. I've always felt that way. Now, both Phil and I got into police work a little bit later in life, if you will. Yeah. I was 26, I believe. And you said you were 28?
28 when I joined San Jose, correct.
San Jose PD. Okay. But you were in corrections before that.
Yes, I was in corrections for a couple of years. But still, at that point, I was 25 and a half, 26 before joining them.
Right, right. Now, what does that bring to the table? Let's face it, the longer you live, the more life experience you have, right? Makes sense. And with life experience, I feel like you can kind of connect things a little bit better and you can go through life. But more importantly, you learn how to work with people. You learn how to deal with people a lot better the older you get. Would you agree with that, Phil?
Yeah, you know what? I think we're I have to say, Assemblymember Reggie Jones Sawyer out of L.A. Is putting this bill forward, and I think right. It kind of goes in line with some of the things that have been coming through the California State Legislature over the last couple of years with regard to law enforcement. So I think it's in line with that. And to your point, specifically to your point, we ask police officers to do so much and to process so much, not just at a scene, but in the totality of their day, whether it's just driving to a call, how to navigate there. Yep. Joan Sawyer even acknowledges that our jobs are complex. They're difficult. Now, let me give you give the folks out there a little bit of background. Again, what I do, I'm the administrative officer for the field training program at the San Jose Police Department. I've been doing it for 4 years, and I've been teaching a field training officer course, which is GSPCC, and in California, through California Post. So I see a lot of different aged and different experienced folks coming through our field training program. And right. So, you know, to your point, Tim, I just think that we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we're not looking at those folks who are more have the experience, whether it's life experience or experience educationally, mm-hmm. and looking at them more deeply in these roles as right. police officers.
Yeah, I agree. Now you came from. I just want to make this one quick point. You came from a corrections background that went into policing. And in my experience, I worked with a few guys that came from the corrections side of the house and then moved over to police work. And I got to tell you, they were so good at communicating with people. Mm. And I'd often heard that corrections officers, because you have to know how to talk to these guys. You have
when you're in a lockdown by yourself with no weapons and 60 guys.
Exactly.
There's got to be something said about verbal judo and your ability to communicate with folks.
Right.
Developing respect, right? Both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? And I just an observation I recently made and kind of to this point, you familiar with the show Alone? It's a survival show. It's a competition. They drop them off in these remote areas and they have to survive out there. And the last one to not quit is the winner.
Yeah,
they win a lot of money. It's pretty big. It's pretty significant. And I was watching season one, and just an observation on this front to kind of hit on what we're talking about not having a gun and being able to communicate. The first guy to drop out on day one, it wasn't even 24 hours, I don't think, and he quit. Guess what his job was?
Oh, no. Was he a cop?
Yeah. There was a bear outside of his tent. He yelled, "Hey, bear." The bear ran away. But he was like, the next day, he was like, "F this,
I'm out.
But then the second guy to quit was from Florida. And when they kind of profiled him, he really, really liked to talk about, he was a big gun guy. He's a big Second Amendment guy. And mm-hmm. he was like, "I always got a gun near me. I always leave my house armed, blah, blah, blah." And it just made me think that these two guys who live a life by the gun, they got a gun on their hip all the time. You become really reliant on that, you know? And I think that was why they quit so early, is because they didn't have the gun, you know? They didn't have that crutch to help them out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I mean, going with that specific example and the background within the California state legislature, not that it's good, bad, or indifferent to whomever out there is listening, but you know, state law came through with regard to our use of force policy and use of deadly force specifically, requiring us to take more of the totality of that individual circumstance, those things that are just being developed within that call for service as the priority, as opposed to relying on other outside things that may make us think a certain way. Mm-hmm. So in this case, to your point, going through the thought process, problem solving and decision-making, which is paramount, particularly in FTO. I mean, Tim, you hear me talking about it all the time.
Yep.
But problem solving and decision-making is a skill that has to be developed. And you brought up that point about the cerebral cortex, mm-hmm. right? Being developed all the way up until, what was it? Was it 25?
25. Yeah. It's not fully developed. Yeah. Your prefrontal cortex. Yeah.
Okay. So that prefrontal cortex, like you said, not being developed, how are we asking folks, for instance, in the city of San Jose, required of 2 years college or required 2 years college and be 20 and a half years of age at the mm-hmm. beginning of the academy.
Right.
How can we ask folks who don't either have the personal experience or the educational experience to make those decisions just based on their training?
Right.
And and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but if we can somehow weave in what's going on in the New England area with regard to hiring folks before they go to an academy and getting some sort of training prior to going to the academy and how they're putting all of that together in their minds, and then how that's manifesting itself on the street at calls for service.
Right.
I think those are things that should be discussed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of this does rely pretty heavily on training. If they're going into the academy and they're learning nothing but draw my gun, and, you know, they're just put in scenarios like that and not put in scenarios where they actually have to think and communicate. Yeah. That's probably where the emphasis should be, is on the problem solving without having to draw your gun, you know, having to actually talk to people and resolve problems.
Right.
And do it in a manner where they're going to cooperate, because you've set up, you know, some lines of respect, you know, you have some good discourse with them. So, and you bring up a good point. So in New Hampshire, I don't think there's a state requirement on that. I think they just let the agencies dictate what that is. And I'm sorry, I didn't look that up. Most departments here use 21 as a marker for hiring, as a minimum age. Yeah. So, I mean, it's better than, you know, bringing them in at 19 or something along those lines. But in my opinion, I think 23 or 24 would actually be a better age. But here's kind of a problem with that is, especially if, you know, they go and they get a job. Let's say someone wants to be a police officer, but they're not interested in getting their degree. Mm-hmm. And a particular agency they want to work for doesn't require a degree. But let's say the state mandates that you're 25 years old. Well, now you got to wait. You know, you have to wait all these years. So now you're going to get entrenched in some other job that when you hit 25, you may say, well, I kind of like it here. You know, I've put in all this work and effort in this, you know, carpentry job or whatever it is you were doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, screw the police work. Now I moved on. So that could be a possible issue with waiting that long. You know,
I think it's actually a benefit. I think in that, look, probably a lot like you were thinking about after being a Navy diver and serving our country, you were thinking about what was the next step for you. And you were probably thinking about early on with as a career in law enforcement.
Yes.
As was I. Yep. One of my older brothers is a retired police officer. My dad was a cop. And if that's something that's just, hey, it's a job I can get now, right now, and it pays pretty well, then let me do it. And I'm not sure if I really want to do it or not, but it pays the bills. That's not the person I want next to me, I don't think.
That's necessarily. A good point.
And, you know, to be honest, we're getting a lot of that. We're getting a lot of that recently. Because we do national recruiting, that people say, hey, it pays so well and it's a beautiful place to live, yada, yada, yada. What happens is they get here, it's hard. My heart really wasn't in it to start with.
Yeah.
Then if you get to be 25, hey, I'm going to be a carpenter. I'm going to be a chef. I'm going to work, be a part-time actor like Tim Jones, and also a part-time restaurateur. Then that's what you do. But you say, when I turn 25 or 24 and a half, I'm going to start applying because that's my calling. That's what I want to do. Then that's the person I want next to me.
Yeah. You're right. It's a calling. And I don't know if I ever told you this story, but, so I was stationed in San Diego. I was married to my wife, Karen, and we knew that we wanted to have a family. And I really didn't want to be in the military and raise kids. I worked with so many guys that, you know, their kids were, you know, spent 2 years at this school, then they go to another state and spend 2 years at that school. And I don't know. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's just not what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was probably going to get out, and I was really interested in law enforcement. But what solidified it was Karen and I were in downtown San Diego, and she had ducked into some shop for some reason. I was just standing out on the sidewalk waiting, and this car came flying by, and there were two cruisers chasing it. It was a pursuit, and I said, that's what I want to do.
That sounds like the way I joined the Marine Corps when I saw those Marine recruiters on campus. I would go, I want to wear that uniform. I want to wear that uniform.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. But how do we balance that you know, that experience that you had through the Navy with education. I mean, if we go all the way back to the 21st century policing, the president's, you know, Council on 21st Century Policing in 2015, it specifically talks about higher education in policing.
Yep.
You know, and whether if we were giving grants or student loans at a very low rate, I think it's a great idea to educate folks who either want to become cops or who are already cops, send them back to school.
Yeah. So let's switch gears then over. So we both agree that I think it's a good thing that people are older when they come into the police, you know, to be a little bit more mature and to have more experience just dealing with people, because that's what you do. That's it. And just on this point too, before we move on, for anyone listening out there who's interested in becoming a police officer, if you work now in an industry where you work with people like retail or the restaurant industry or something along those lines, believe it or not, you are doing yourself a huge service for going into police work, because you deal with people. You deal with someone, like say you're a waiter or a waitress and you've got an angry customer. You have to learn how to work with that and deal with it. That's police work, man. Every day. That's what you have to do.
And that is 100 times at more of a premium today than at any other time in our policing history.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So I highly recommend that if you, let's say you're in California and you have to wait until you're 25, work in some sort of industry where you are directly working with people. It will, it will help you immensely, certainly. So moving over to education, how can you say this is a bad thing? It's not a bad thing. It's 100% positive.
We're not precluding folks, I think this bill is not precluding folks who, if you graduate at the age of 22, you can apply immediately. You have a master's degree.
Right.
That's what I mean?
It's a degree or 25, right? It's not.
Right. Yeah. Right. And there's such good research out there. I was reading this article by Leanna Buford and Gaylene Armstrong. One's of Iowa State, one's of Nebraska, Omaha. And Gaylene is the director of the School of Criminology. And they wrote this article on five reasons police officers should have college degrees. And I think one of these is really going to ring your bell here, Tim.
Okay.
Number one is they're less likely to use violence. And I think this comes from the study that we both at least looked at, referenced, that they 40% less likely to use force.
40%.
40%. That is a giant number. We're not talking 10, 11, 12%. 40%. Close to half of the time, folks who are educated are using force less.
Interesting.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And like I said, I didn't get in depth into the research of it. I read the research abstract. But it goes again to your point that coincides with experience, and that experience that you talked to about talking to people is that you've developed this ability to not necessarily rationalize, but decision make, to problem solve on a much higher level.
Yes.
And so then you don't need to be alone and rely on your gun when the bear is outside the tent.
Yes.
Maybe you can talk the bear down.
Maybe you can, yeah, exactly. Maybe you be a little more rational. Also, especially if your education is in criminal justice. Now, this was something I got my associate's degree before I started in police work, and I found that it was extremely helpful for me because, you know, when you go to the academy, you learn about case law, you learn about, you know, Miranda, but when you're in college, you have to write reports and write papers on Miranda, what happened, you know, so you get a little bit more in-depth understanding.
Sure.
So maybe it's because people who are college educated kind of understand these case studies a bit more. They understand what the officers did wrong in those situations, if it is a case law that was kind of predicated on a police officer's making mistakes. So maybe that's just, they just have a better understanding of that. I had a former boss who used to tell me, the last thing you want to do in law enforcement is to have your name on case law.
That's so. Right. Yeah. So. No, I mean, to your point, and you've heard me talk about this in FTO schools. We talk about learning domains in FTO schools and how to train new police officers. And so much of the time we are focused on that psychomotor learning domain, that motor memory, right? Mm-hmm. How to physically do things and interact physically with things instead of that cognitive learning domain, where we're processing and we're thinking those things out. And to your point, I think that the totality of college or university, a degree, is supposed to give you that. That's what it's supposed to give you in life. You're supposed to, while you have a major, it's supposed to give you a feel for everything in the educational field, mm-hmm. so that you can be a citizen or a human being that gives back, right? I mean, that's the basis behind university.
Right, right. Now, you said California. Now, does the state require at least an associate's degree?
That's with our police department in San Jose. Most places are between 40 and 60 units of college credit. See, and also while you're getting some college credit, shoot, you can take 40 units of, PE, and maybe you're good at math, which I'm not, and just take math. I don't know necessarily how well that's going to help you.
Right.
But California, hey, you can join the CHP with a high school diploma and be 21.
You can.
The California Highway Patrol. Yeah. And I think that we're talking about education and what's it going to do. You said it at the top. What's it potentially going to do, or what the outcome is going to be within policing?
Mm.
Some small agencies are going to basically get run out of the market, I guess. If I already have a degree, maybe I don't want to necessarily go work at a small agency, because now if I'm 25 or I have a degree, I can go anywhere. Maybe they're getting those older police officers that aren't as educated at smaller agencies because they've met the age requirement.
Yeah.
Maybe the older or the more educated folks are going to larger departments who have more places, to go within the structure of policing within that department.
More opportunities for advancement and specialization. Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah. So smaller agencies definitely may suffer in this. That's for sure. Do you think that it's going to, or can you see incentives from police departments and offering to pay for people's college or to try to, or maybe give them more pay because they have a degree, along those lines?
You know what? I think in doing some research, I got 3 pages of notes in front of me, by the way, doing some research. I think that I know that there are already educational incentives out there.
Yep. Yeah. Right? My agency had them. Yeah.
So you have a higher degree, you make more money for California Post. If you can get to your advanced post, your peace officer standards and training certification, you can get to that certification faster if you're more educated. Right. So if you have you come in when you're 25, and let's say you went bachelor's degree, master's degree, you're 25. As soon as you graduate from the academy, you have your basic post. You put, you get past probation. You put a year on the street. You apply for your intermediate post. Yep. And then after 3 years of experience on the street, your 3 years plus your master's degree, advanced post, instead of some folks who are waiting 10 and 15 years to get their advanced post degree, who aren't as educated as others. Those, at least in our agency, those different levels of certification are tied to pay increases.
Okay. All right. And that was just within your agency though, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So New Hampshire, Massachusetts, they don't anymore, but they had something called the Quinn Bill at one time, which I think the motives behind it were pretty good, but I think it was causing problems within each police department in the state with respects to their budget. So what it was a state law that said if a police officer had an associate's degree, they would get a certain percentage of extra pay. Mm-hmm. Bachelor get more, master's get more. Now it was it was an unfunded mandate, right? So it was like, I would tell, you know, Agency X, hey, your guy has a master's degree. You got to pay him 25% more.
And figure like, out how to do it.
Are you going to give me the money? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Right. So they've done away with it. I've heard talks that they may bring it back, but kind of structure it a little bit differently. Mm. But what it did was, it was pretty rare in the day, if you went to a training down in Massachusetts and you were with mass officers, pretty much all of them had master's degrees.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Heck yeah.
I mean, yes, 25% more pay.
Yeah, it pays to play for sure.
It pays to play, but they did have the degree, you know?
Right.
So, right. You know, there's incentives there. So you said there were five reasons.
Yeah, there's five reasons. Yeah, the other one was
use of force.
We talked about it a little bit already, but it lends itself to more problem-oriented policing. I think that this is a case that something that we've developed over the last couple of years in San Jose, and it's gotten away from the community policing, although we still do that, but it's something where we're really looking at the numbers, right, of where crime is occurring, what kinds of crimes are occurring there, and then focusing attention on those areas and those specific things instead of casting a wide net and then grabbing folks that aren't necessarily associated with those kinds of crimes, even though they're living in those areas, right?
Right.
So it work smarter, not harder.
Yeah,
I think is what it comes down to.
You focus in on the actual problem and not, like you said, throwing the wide net. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then number three is talking about better relating to the community. And I think we all would understand this is that once you've increased your level of knowledge and understanding, not only about you and your personal bubble, but about the world around you, you have more of ability to be empathetic, right?
Yeah,
And take your neighbors and the folks who you're serving, right? We've got to remember we have to have a servant's attitude here, that you're serving these folks. Yes. And so you have the ability to empathize and be more connected to the community. Right.
Because if you go to college, especially if you live on campus, you know, you're around a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds, and it kind of forces you to have to learn about you know, different cultures, different ideology, different approaches. I mean, Josh had to do that when he hooked up with me, a Southern boy here, you know, that takes no bullshit from him.
Right, but I love it.
We haven't fist fought yet, but we've come close.
But I love it. I've known him less amount of time, and it's been closer to fisticuffs. It's just gonna be two hits. He's gonna hit me and I'm gonna hit the ground.
I know. I think I could outrun him in the short distance. He says he's a fast sprinter, but I think if I go around a tree,
I've seen some of those basketball videos, Tim. I don't know.
I can't wait till he hears this and gives the feedback. Oh, man.
Get back on task. Number four is we have the ability as educated police officers to identify best practices. Now, this for me, this goes back to in 2017, I was tasked with a lieutenant, another officer, and a civilian to implement our body-worn camera program.
Yeah.
Right. And so my lieutenant was working on writing policy with research and development while I'm working with Taser at the time, now Axon, they're called, working with Axon on an implementation strategy and a teaching strategy, and then putting that forth in the manner that would be best accepted by police officers, brand new ones, and folks who had 1 or 2 years left before retirement, who were thinking, at this point of the career, you're bringing body cameras on. So being able to, you know, cognitively work those problems out and identify best practices on how to do policing, is part of or be or comes with more education is what at least the articles say.
Yeah, I can see how you can tie that to it. Yeah,
and I don't. I know this one's going to ring your bell, because this is how I think, at least from my understanding, how GSPCC came about is that it builds better and you're better future leaders. So it builds better leaders and better future leaders.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So you're building leadership now, even at the lowest levels of your organization when they're educated. Look, I'm an officer. And I am in the top 150 total of seniority in my entire department, a department of close to 1,200.
Right.
I'm an officer.
Yeah.
So I know I'm looked at from a leadership point of view. And like you, I hold a master's degree. Mm-hmm. Right. And so some of that education has helped not necessarily to promote me, but to help me share my insight and information with not only my unit, where I'm supervised by a sergeant and lieutenant, but through my division with my captain all the way up to my deputy chief and above.
Right.
And then it prepares you or prepares folks and your organization for leadership as that older leadership retires. We're filling that gap more quickly and with more educated folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's another element that I'm sure you'll agree with me on this. Although there are exceptions with respects to having a degree, what is one of the main things you have to do when you go through college? You have to write. You have to learn how to write.
Oh, my gosh.
Guess what you have to do in police work? You have
sleep.
To write.
No. Oh, right. Oh, no, right.
The sleep is after the write.
Yeah.
You got to write. You have to write reports. And I got to tell you that, again, there are exceptions, but most of the guys that I used to work with, as a supervisor, the ones that had a college degree had no issues writing reports. It was just another day. It was just what they had to do. And their grammar was solid. Their structure was solid. Their reports made sense. I will tell you, I used to have this one kid, great guy, funny as all out. He was an athlete in college. And
so he didn't go to class.
he was a very good police officer. However, his reports were terrible.
dramatically
terrible, you know. And I used to always give him like, you really have a degree? He's like, I was an athlete, man. I had people write my reports. Like, all right, whatever, I'll write my papers.
Sounds about right. That doesn't surprise me.
Let me ask you this. It's not part of what California is proposing, but what do you think of the significance how helpful is it to have a military background before going into policing?
You know, some of that is taken as a hiring benefit. I know LAPD, that's a big thing on their checklist, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think now, less than ever, now more than ever, it's not as important. Does that make sense? It's not as important as it was 10, 15, 20, 45 years ago, whatever.
Right.
When my dad became a cop in the 60s, he got out of the army as a military policeman and went back to his hometown, kind of where he grew up. You're hiring, went in, met with the chief. They said, hey, yeah, you're an MP in the army. Great. Come back next week and
here's your badge, here's your gun.
We'll get you your gear. Go get them, kid. Right?
Right.
And I know you've heard that story in my FTO schools, but it's just bananas to me. However, I will say this. That one thing, and I know that you would never, ever give up your background in the Navy, as I would never give up my background in the Department of the Navy as a Marine. That was just for you. I know Josh was in something very similar. What do they call them? Oh yeah. Fraternities.
He was in a fraternity. Yeah. But it was a very militant fraternity. They wore berets.
So I will say with regard to discipline and your ability to show up on time and coordinate all of your resources and and take care of your gear and things like that, that's definitely a benefit. However, yeah. when we talk about talking to people, there's a difference between clearing a house when you go in as a police officer and you're clearing, just looking around corners, working on with members of your stack. And there's a difference between throwing a grenade in a building.
Right. And then just looking for who's and alive. Then,
and right. You're right. And then yeah. lighting it up and then clearing it.
Right, yeah. right. I agree. I will say though, that it's funny that whenever I teach a class, which is usually leadership, I love to acknowledge the military people, former military people in the class, at least, you know, recognize them.
Yeah, you do. And I always appreciate that.
Yeah. And the more I do it, the less I have. I was in one the other day and there were none. There were no people, former military, which surprised me. Yeah. It surprised me because it was like a time when it was like a natural progression to come out of the military and go into police work because of the structure, the paramilitary aspect of police work, but just not really seeing that much anymore.
Tim, I think that's a good jumping off point for how much of, if maybe in California, how much of your military education, we used to do things, you know, and I was in the Marine Corps a billion years ago. Mm-hmm. We used to have these things, these paper booklets called MCIs, Marine Corps Institute, right? You complete them, you turn them in, you get proctored a test by one of your commanders, and then you get credit for promotion. Yeah. How much of your military experience should be counted toward college credit?
It depends on what you do, I think.
I would agree, yeah.
Yeah, if you're in a more specialized type of department, you know, like if you're in the intelligence or like Submariner guys deal with very, very complicated technical equipment. In all aspects. And if you're a Submariner in the Navy, you have to be qualified on everything. There's no option. You have to. Whereas on a surface ship, you certainly have to qualify with what you do. But as far as being qualified on everything on the boat, that's optional. But they don't do that on the sub because if things go bad, you got to know how to operate whatever's near you, right? So, which reminds me, I want to ask you a question about that in just a few minutes. But depending on the specialization of what you do leave with some credits. So, because when I got my associate's degree, because I was a diver, I had a lot of credits in science, like oceanography and things of that nature that transferred over. Yeah.
Yep.
But I don't know how that works if you're in infantry or something along those lines. And I'm not talking down to infantry. I'm just saying I don't know if that translates to any college credit.
Well, the Marine Corps, you know, that's why we have cross rifles under our chevrons, because everyone's a basic rifleman.
Right. Yep.
I will say this. We had a former Air Force. Oh, I didn't want to say the branch. We had a former officer who was in logistics, who was in his, he was beyond 30 years old, and he had a very tough time passing our field training program.
Really?
And that goes to your point about specialties. You're in logistics. You're an officer.
Right.
I'm used to, as an officer, I'm used to telling people what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Delegating that authority and then counting beans. It's so to your point about specialties, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So here's something I proposed to my deputy chief one time, and he thought it was going to be too complicated to implement. So, in the Navy, they have, if you're on the surface side of the house, you can get something that's called an ESWAS. I forget what that stands for, but it's basically a PIN designation that you can get. And what you have to do, you have to earn it. You have to basically know all the operations of the entire ship, you know, from what happens up in navigation all the way down to the engine room. You have to know everything, right? And then you have to go in front of a board and they quiz you. They don't let you just sign off on everything and move on, right? You have to be able to state what each area of operation has to do, and what would you do in these scenarios and things like that. But in the Navy, if you don't have it, you can't expect to ever make E7. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things. If you want to have a career in the Navy and you want to move up past E7, you have to have it. So you have to do it. On the submarine side, you have to do it no matter what. From E1 to the captain, you have to do it, like I said before. But what I proposed to my deputy chief was, instead of, because in my agency, master patrolman was just, once you hit a certain amount of years, you just got master patrolman, right? You didn't have to take a test, you didn't have to earn it or anything like that.
Right.
And I thought that to earn that, why not understand every operation of the agency, right? Like, know what records has to do, know how to deal with evidence behind the scenes, know what detectives are doing, you know? So you have more of an understanding of the entirety of the department and how it operates, not just your particular niche. But they didn't bite on it, so it didn't happen.
Well, it probably was like, look, the folks who are up for it very soon don't want to have to go through all that, right?
Yeah.
But you know, that goes to if there's going to be change, and we know there's going to be change in policing, there's constant change right now. The FTO program in San Jose is the same length now as it was when I went through, coming up on 24 years ago now. And they're doing 1,000 things differently and more than I was.
Yeah.
And if you talk about the professional status of policing,
yeah,
and I think we consider ourselves a profession. We have an oath, right?
Yep.
So we take an oath. We consider ourselves professionals. Then, if we consider ourselves professionals, why wouldn't we, in your case, to your example, want to know all of the ins and outs of whatever the size agency it is, whether it's a promotion or not, if it's coming with money, then I think the organization has the ability to say, we're going to change what's associated with that money. We're going to require more, especially nowadays, and for the profession of policing. And I think you and I can both agree that we really consider ourselves professionals in law enforcement. Shoot, you retired as a lieutenant, and I have the utmost respect for you that you did this diving career in the Navy and then moved through the ranks in your agency in Londonderry, became a lieutenant. That's a giant thing.
Well, you
two careers in your lifetime already, and you're on your third and your fourth, owning a company, teaching, doing all of these things. But that's because you have this bite, this desire, and this drive to be a professional. And that probably comes not only from your internal push, but it also comes from your education. And I think that if we want to push the professionalism of policing, that we want to change the narrative that we are professional, that we mete out the law rightfully and evenly and fairly, then why not expect more from our police officers, whether it's taking a test to be a master patrolman or getting more education to be a police officer on its very basic level?
Yep. You know what? I think that's a good place to finish off there, my friend. You finished it up very well. Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers. All right. Well, Phil, I really appreciate your time and your insight into this. I hope it passes.
I do too.
I hope it passes.
Because you know what happens? Because everything moves west.
It does.
And it's not necessarily, from west to east. And it doesn't necessarily need to move all the way to the East Coast, because there's so much thought about change and for the better. Not saying take money away from the police department necessarily, but let's just make our folks more professional in nature so that they can serve better, right?
Right.
And what it's got to do is it's got to hit the Midwest somehow, me from the East and the West. It's got to hit the Midwest and Texas.
Yeah.
And then we're good.
Then we're good. It'll pass through. Yeah. Yeah. At a minimum, require associate's degree. Cause it's better than nothing, you know? So,
right.
Maybe it's a good stepping off point. I don't know. So, all right. Well,
I did a ton of research for you guys.
You're the man, you know, you are the man. Here's my research.
I love it. Pictures.
Yeah. And this was actually, the assemblyman, Reggie Jones Sawyer, that you were referencing earlier in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right, my man. So everyone else, in closing, please, if you will, subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform. We're on everything, man. We're like dog hair. We're everywhere, you know? So please, we're even on YouTube, and we're also,
what's up, Drake, by the way,
Rumble.
Shout out to Drake.
Yeah, I locked him out. He was being a bit antsy tonight. So he was my son and his buddies were out ice skating today on a pond, and he was out there with them the whole time. So I could hear him barking the whole time. He was happy as heck. Yeah, very happy. So, so we're out there, man. We're on every podcast platform, and we're also on YouTube and on Rumble. If you could just look us up, give us some thumbs up, subscribe, give us 5 stars, you know, everything. But even more importantly, if you can support us on Patreon, we would so appreciate it. All right. Any parting words there, Phil?
Hey, I will see you at the end of the month. We got FTO school and
Supervisor,
Administrator, Commander course for FTO school. Also, real quick, I can't tell you again how excited I am. We've put hundreds of folks through our FTO schools over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And now we have this Supervisor, Administrator, Commander course going on where folks who are actually running the field training programs will know the same things that their field training officers know.
Yep.
And hopefully that will help build more professional field training programs, officers, and agencies.
Yes. I feel like it can't do nothing but do that. And
totally agree.
And so we decided to go forward. We had a discussion about this SAC class, and it was like, it was a gamble. We just didn't know if it was going to take off, if people were going to do it. And it's now shut out. It's now closed off. The FTO class, which is going to be in the same week, I think we're up to seven people on the waiting list.
There's a need and a desire.
And I also think that, and I give you full credit for this, Phil, you do such a wonderful job with this FTO class. You're a great teacher, and you deliver the content so well and so passionately that people understand the importance of FTOing, how it's so crucial.
Yeah.
It's the pivotal point. It's what truly makes or breaks your agency, is that the FTO program, and people are understanding that. And I give that full credit to you, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, everyone, you take care out there. Be safe. Stay out of trouble. If you do get in trouble, make it worth it. All right. Take care, man. See
Bye-bye.
You later, Phil. Bye-bye.
See ya.